Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Great show this week. Two guests. First up, Nate Burleson from Good Morning Football, who is departing that show. If you follow me on Twitter and read Traina Thoughts, you know I'm a big fan of Good Morning Football. Have been since day one. Nate leaving to go to CBS to co-host their morning show, CBS This Morning. And he talks about the decision to leave Good Morning Football, join CBS, what his ultimate goals are. Got into the Nickelodeon broadcast that he did that was a smash hit NFL playoffs last year. And Nate does a tremendous Jay-Z impersonation during the podcast as well. Following Nate, James Andrew Miller, author, writer, reporter, discusses ESPN, what's going on with the Peyton Manning, Eli Manning show, who's going to be the host. Talks about Max Kellerman leaving First Take, and then we get into some Curb Your Enthusiasm stuff and a little chat about the Sopranos prequel, Curb, and the Sopranos movie, both coming out in October. Before we get to Nate and James Andrew Miller, just a reminder, if you miss any previous episodes, please go into the archives, check them out. Joe Buck was on the show last week, Roman Reigns, Chris Mando, Russo 2 weeks ago, Ian Eagle 3 weeks ago, Brian Curtis from The Ringer 4 weeks ago, all those podcasts in the archives. If you can subscribe, that helps tremendously, and rate and review. I'm going to start reading reviews on the pod every week during the Traina Thoughts segment, which we also have following Nate and James Andrew Miller. We do Traina Thoughts with Sal Licata, talk about Hard Knocks, SummerSlam, and this guy suing Nirvana, who's on the cover of their Nevermind album. So big show. Let's get right to it right now with Nate Burleson. All right, joining me now. I'm a little sad about this, but happy for him because he's leaving my favorite morning show, Good Morning Football. Going on to the CBS morning show, CBS This Morning, Nate Burleson, who's been on the pod many times. Nate, congrats. How you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you having me on the pod again, Jay. Thank you so much. It's a joyous but also somewhat sad week for me. You know, I'm moving on to another job, but I'm leaving my crew. I said it on the show. It's the longest team that I've ever been a part of. The most I've ever spent on one team from a football perspective is 4 years. So 5 years with Kay, Kyle, and Peter and everybody else behind the scenes. It's a little sad. It's coming to an end for me. I'll still be doing some stuff on the show, just not in studio.
Right. You guys did 5 years together. This would have been year six. I have to say, I talked to Kyle and Peter every now and then, and I did mention to Kyle, I think maybe even last season, like, it's so good, but you're all so good on the show that it has to break up eventually, because I'm sure all four of you are getting offers like crazy. So I was hoping we'd get one more season out of you. I thought for sure this would be the last season with the four of you together, and then obviously, and it's one of those things, too, where there was... I'm sure it didn't take you more than 1 second to decide to take this. I mean, you have to take that job. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Listen, contrary to what people may believe, it took a long time for me to make this decision.
Really?
Basically because, one, I am a loyal guy. So if I'm locked in with one squad, I'm not looking to join another team. I remember being in college, and I'm at Nevada, Reno. And first year I had to sit out because of some transcripts from high school that didn't transfer over. Second year, decent, 50 catches. Third year, decent, like 50 catches. And then everybody starts knocking on my door and they're like, oh, we see the potential in this guy. All these big schools are coming and calling and saying, come join our squad. Some were saying you can sit out. Some were saying you can play it right away. I bring all this up because I had an opportunity to leave Nevada, Reno. Even University of Washington and Washington State, where I'm from. And I just thought to myself, I'm loyal to the soil. Nevada, Reno was one of the first schools. They were most aggressive and they gave me an opportunity. So I stuck it out. Now, we didn't end up going to a bowl game, but that last year when I decided to come back, my junior season, I had 138 catches, led the nation in every category and was an All-American. And that wouldn't have happened if I would have joined some big school that had a host of wide receivers and I was just one of many. So that was always an example for me to stick with it through the tough times. Times haven't really been tough. We're talking about TV, but there have been opportunities for me to leave. Year in and year out, there's whispers of new platforms, starting new shows and big money being thrown around And I just kept putting it off. And then when this opportunity came, I just thought, man, I don't want to leave right now. I want to leave when everybody else leaves. I want to leave when it's finally over, like when we have a season finale or a series ending finale. But I didn't know when that was. And I wasn't going to walk away from CBS This Morning because it's such a storied show with a rich history. And there's not too many opportunities like this in TV.
Right.
We look at it as real estate. It's like there's not too many homes available, not too many seats available like that.
Right. Absolutely. And you probably can't or won't say this, but I'll say it. And this is no disrespect to the NFL Network, because I watch Good Morning Football every morning. But
of course,
in the media world, if you're in it, you can't compare the money that NFL Network would pay to what network CBS for their morning show would pay, which is, I mean, those morning show, you know, it's funny. We're in this day and age where, you know, people think broadcast TV is dead and it's all about streaming and this. The amount of money that those morning shows make on CBS and NBC and, you know, Today Show, Good Morning, is, you know, astronomical. So from that standpoint, I know people don't like to say, you know, oh, it's about the money or that, but
right.
You'd be insane to pass that deal up. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, well, Strahan, he laid the blueprint, and people were wondering why he kept elevating and leapfrogging and making these moves into these spaces that players and African-American players traditionally don't find themselves in. And then you start hearing the whispers of how much Strahan is making. Now, I'm not Strahan. I'm not making Strahan money. Right. You have to get a footing in this space, and you have to create some longevity, and then the checks become bigger and bigger.
Right.
But you're right, though. Morning news, daytime TV, even, you know, those political shows on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. Like it's a different type of viewership. You know, we're instead of talking to hundreds of thousands of people that are diehard sports fans for their particular team, you are talking to millions of people that are interested in what's going on, not just in their country, but globally.
Now, tell me, I know you're still, Nate's going to still be doing the NFL Today every right. Sunday. But I'm just curious now, for you personally, now you're not talking football Monday through Friday for 3 hours. You're going to do news. I'm sure there'll be a ton of pop culture stuff and all that on those morning shows. Did you like the thought of that? Like, are you worn out from talking about football 5 days a week, or do you think you'll miss talking about football 5 days a week?
I'm not worn out, but I do have interest in other things. When you're talking football 24/7, which, you know, there are times where I was working 7 days a week and it's football for a few different networks. And then I come home and I'd be the voice for DraftKings. And then I do a podcast for Uninterrupted, and it's all sports related. The monotony of what you're talking about, not the actual sport, but the subject matter, it starts to wear on you. So switching things up was always the plan. That's the reason why I went into Extra. Extra wasn't paying me an astronomical number, but the opportunity to work in the entertainment space and prove that I'm as versatile as any other TV personality out there, that was the point. And strategically, it worked out exactly how I wanted it to. As far as being excited about talking about things other than sports, it does intrigue me tremendously. And it's not just because, you know, I want to learn on the job. A quick rundown resume about me for people who don't know much more than Nate Burleson, a football player, and Nate Burleson, the TV host. During my career, I launched multiple clothing lines. I owned an Italian restaurant in Seattle. I helped create a firm that encourages, educates, and helps athletes invest their money wisely. I have been writing poetry since the seventh grade and still do to this day. At a very young age, I thought I was going to be a painter or a famous artist because I had easel and paintbrushes. And I thought that the artistic lane was going to be the one that I lived the majority of my life. So all of these things, they create who I am right now. So when you see me on the news in the morning and I'm doing a piece about small business, you know, surviving the pandemic, or I'm talking to an artist at a museum, or I'm in the field in the financial district, you know, doing a piece on, you know, the volatility of the stock market. It's not because I'm thrown into these spaces without any knowledge of them. Most of the time, I have knowledge of them because I live in those spaces currently. So I'm not saying I know everything, but what I'm saying, majority of the things that people talk about and cover in the morning news, that's my daily life. So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited for people to see the other side of it, not the athlete that's articulate and eloquent. And, oh, he can speak well. And, you know, he's a pretty good TV host and he can read the teleprompter. You know, I like it when he interviewed J-Lo and I caught him on the red carpet with Pacino. Like, yeah, I like Nate. There's a completely different side of Nate Burleson. And at the same time, I get to learn on the job. You know, a lot of why I can call into any show up on any set and not study about any topic and say, just ask me anything about football. And I'm always ready to answer is because I've been studying football for the last 7 years because I work the job. So you have to prepare, and by osmosis, you download stuff that you don't even know that you have knowledge of. And I'm really excited about that in this new space. So for the gaps that I may have in news coverage, whether it's very obscure geographical locations, political pockets that I might not be caught up on, I get to learn on the job, which is exciting. And at this age, at the age of 40, that is a thrill to me. Because when I come home and I'm talking about all these things, when I'm talking to my sons about cryptocurrency and I'm trying to figure out a way to open up a Robinhood or Anchor app, or talking to my friend at Merrill Lynch and asking the age requirement for them to open up an investment account, like, these are things that are part of Nate Burleson's everyday life, which is going to be exciting because I get to talk about these on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's all about being well-rounded. Let me ask you this. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
NFL wide receiver, television broadcaster.
Yeah.
Started your own clothing line, opened an Italian restaurant. Which was the hardest?
I would say opening a restaurant.
I thought, because I've always said, I may have said this on this, I think the restaurant business is the hardest business to be in.
It really
is. You have
to
deal with so much, you know, you're dealing with like codes and, you know, liquor license, and then you're dealing with customers who are certifiably insane. Everyone wants their, you know, everyone's a pain in the ass. Everyone wants their food well done, not on the side. This, can I substitute? Like, and you have to be nice. It's a customer service business. That's a hard business.
It really is. You know, and I didn't hop in a chain and it put my money into something that was already working. It was a second restaurant of a one of one. So, you know, we had to go through everything, the real estate, the permits, the codes within the building, you know, making sure that we have a harmonious relationship with the next door businesses. And like you said, the liquor licenses, and then, you know, trying to figure out how I want my specific menu to be different from the original. But it was worth it. And in the hand to hand transactions, like, you know, learning about the failure rate of restaurants is one thing. You know, you kind of go into it, studying up on, you know, how successful you may or may not be. But I remember learning how much money is lost at the bar and having a great relationship with my bartender. And every day I'd walk in, it was like cheers, because that was really one of the main reasons why I opened the restaurant, because I didn't want to walk into a place where everybody knew my name. Sounds silly, but you don't realize, you know, what has impacted you when you watch it as a kid and how it manifests itself as an adult. But I would walk in and bartender be like, hey, yo, Nate, what's up, man? Same drink. I'll send it to your table. I go in the back. I relax. And I'm looking at this idea that turned into a material, tangible thing, work in real time. But then I'd have these real conversations about how money is being lost and even sometimes being stolen. And I was like, golly, man, running a restaurant is hard. Now, do I want to do it again? Yeah, for sure. And I have a little bit of knowledge in that space. So yeah, to answer your question in a long-winded way, it's restaurants for sure.
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd say that. So on the CBS Morning Show, I assume we'll see in some cooking segments since you have that background there. We'll see you mixing it up there.
And I love to cook as an adult. So I want to do it all, man. I really do. And I was talking to some producers the other day and I said, I know the easy thing will be to pitch sports segments. And don't get me wrong, I'll do it. You know, I'm a sports nut. I love basketball, low key. Like, it was my first love. So I love it more than football. Of course, we can talk football, baseball, boxing, I mean, MMA, soccer. So like any sport, we can talk rugby. I'm just a fan of athletic ability. And not even in a sense of just running and jumping. We can talk, you know, golf and table tennis. It doesn't matter to me. Sports is sports. So sports segments, cool, pitch them. But I had to tell the producers and my team, think outside the box. Because when you get to know me, like, that's what people think. They're like, damn, like, I didn't realize Nate was, this interested in a wide variety of things. And I want to be uncomfortable. And I know this isn't like investigative journalism, but there is a part of me that wants that. I want you to send me on the scene, into the thick of it. I want to have real conversations. You know, I wish I had this job during the turmoil in this country and I can go talk to people on opposing ends of racism, you know, and talk to individuals that might not see this country the way I see it, or might look at my skin and see me differently than I see myself. I'm willing to have those conversations and I want to have those conversations. So, I've done a lot of surface work as a football analyst and sports host, which, you know, surface work pays the bills. And I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I make people happy. I can, you know, talk about your favorite team in a clever way. And I got jokes and puns. But I do want to, when I retire, leave a deeper impact. And I think there's space for me to grow and achieve things that I have never dreamed of. I didn't think I was going to be an Emmy winner, let alone three-time, you know, the regional one and the two I won this past year. And now I'm thinking, you know what, maybe my path in the NFL and never making it to a Super Bowl and not becoming a Hall of Famer and having injuries that kind of derailed like consistency throughout my career, maybe that created this hunger inside of me as an adult where now I can go grab trophies that I didn't think were offered to me. You know, now that I have a sports in me, I want to win an Emmy in morning TV.
Right. Right, daytime.
It's out there and it's available. So I want to do that and be part of this team. And I'm not saying I'm the missing piece. I'm not like the Robert Horry or anything to the squad. I'm just saying that I'm going to do my best to bust my behind and prove and earn the trust of everybody involved in the morning news over at CBS.
I'm sure you'll be great because, like I said, I mean, it's all about versatility on a show like that, too. I mean, like you said, I mean, one morning you could be, you know, you're covering a COVID outbreak and one morning you're doing a cooking segment. One morning you could be talking right about the milk crate challenge. I mean, that's basically how it goes on those shows.
We need to hire you as a producer, man. You got the rhythm of the show already, man.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I said this to Kyle recently. I've always been, from day one, I was a fan of your show. I've always loved it. And I said to him, you know, I give you guys more credit for what you do on Good Morning Football in the off season than during the season.
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and try to say it's easy during the season, but you have the games. So like a Monday show is probably like the easiest thing for you to do.
Stories, right,
Thursday night. I watch you guys in the off season and I'm just like, I don't know how they do this. I mean, that's rough sometimes.
It's tough that during the season, the stories write themselves. So we're basically coming in and adding just a little bit of color. I mean, the vibrancy of games within themselves, the storylines, the drama, the injuries. We just come in and it's like we're playing second fiddle, or we're the supporting actor to the main actor of the movie, which is football. In the offseason, It's tough. It's tough. And the best, there's the gift and the curse. The gift is we have time and there's a little more space for us to be creative. We produce up a lot of our segments. And on top of that, we can work on certain things that we usually wouldn't get the time to work on during the season. Now, the curse is that it's a bit more exhausting. I'll just call it what it is. I remember going to an NBA game years ago. I was in Los Angeles and I'm in LA and I'm like, man, this is it. You got celebs courtside. You know what I'm saying? You got Kobe over there. Like this is heaven. And I was thinking, man, I hope I came to a Laker game with one of those great halftime shows. That would make this game perfect. You know what I mean? I got all my favorite players I'm watching. Right. I'm looking at the celebs, like, you know, hope I don't get a lackluster halftime show. So this lady comes up and she's on a unicycle. And I'm like, oh, unicycle lady. And then she starts juggling. I'm like, unicycle juggling lady. And then she pulls out some plates. And I'm like, oh, a couple of plates. And then she starts stacking and spinning these plates. And the plates are hot. It looks like something out of like Cat in the Hat, you know? And I just kept thinking to myself, that must be the most difficult thing ever. To keep your balance on a unicycle, spinning these plates in multiple hands, switching hands, jumping bowl to bowl and plate to plate. And that's how I describe, and that's how I look at in my mind, GMFBI offseason. Like, people may not know. They tune in and they're like, man, I'm having such a good time. But really, we get done and we're just happy we didn't drop a plate. You know what I'm saying? We're just happy we didn't drop a bowl, because trying to balance information and entertainment in an offseason where there isn't football is, I think, some of our best work.
Yeah. I meant to ask you this earlier, and then I want to talk about like your last couple of days here at GMFB, but were you surprised at all about how overwhelmingly positive the reaction was to the Nickelodeon game?
I was. Social media is one of the most vicious, lanes of communication we have in society. You know, people hop on there just to crash cars. People hop on there that don't know how to drive. And even when you have a nice driver that wants to wave and say hello, nice car, there's somebody zooming by flipping you off. Like that's what the information highway of social media is.
It's one of the best descriptions I've ever heard.
It's real. And what happens out of the 100 cars that drive by, we pay attention to the car that honks the horn, the jerk that looks at us, the one that rolls down the window and says, you suck. The one that flips us off. It's just human nature. It happens all the time when we're actually walking around every day. We can see you get 10 people wave to us. And one person that like looks at us nasty, it bothers us. So I was just waiting for that. And I thought on the flip side, it would be more of that. What? Football, Nickelodeon? Nate? Like, why is he even calling games? I know he did some preseason stuff with the Rams and the Lions back in the day, but like, who is this dude? I was just waiting and I just kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and I just couldn't find it. And I mean, there were a few detractors, but for the most part, I think people saw the effort we were trying to put in. And it was simply to bridge the gap between a younger generation that casually watched the sport and an older generation that are traditionalists and might not want to watch it in the format that Nickelodeon will put it. But I think surprisingly, a lot of adults, old and young adults, looked at it and said, oh, this is more entertaining than I thought. And I had to find that balance. I didn't want to come in and just be wacky and goofy and let's just talk about Double Dare for four quarters. I was like, nah, you know, let me actually find the blend. I mean, create a hybrid between my memories of Nickelodeon, the memories of Nickelodeon now, and then marry that with not football for dummies, but like basic level information of football while talking about a football game in the playoffs. Like it's not the preseason. You know, I can't just come up there and say a whole bunch of nothing and people will be entertained. Right. I had to make sure there was a respect for the game that they're watching. Like These are dudes playing for the Super Bowl, at least a chance at it. So I was overwhelmed, man. And I think that response said enough about the demographic of young men and women that would love to watch the game in a different format.
Well, and even I think it was even old men and women too, like myself. True. I mean, everyone got a kick out of it. So, you know, are we doing it again this year? Do you know? Is it official? Or there's just talks so far? What do we know about?
Yeah. So, you know, the NFL and Nickelodeon, they have created a relationship. I'm going to be working with Nickelodeon in a small capacity every week. I can't give you too many details on that, but let's just say it's going to be an exciting show. But then as far as games go, yeah, I believe that the NFL has started something that a lot of leagues will follow suit. Just imagine playing basketball. Steph Curry shoots a three-pointer. It goes in, splashes, ooze and slime. And you know, imagine, you know, watching baseball. You hit a home run. As soon as the home run, you know, the slime zone is the crowd. So endless possibilities.
Yeah. Let's talk about Good Morning Football for a little bit before we wrap. This is such a lame and cliche question, but I'll do it anyway. Do you have what is your favorite memory of the show? Don't give me like, oh, the relationships or give me a single memory.
I got you. There was a moment in time, and Kyle talked about it a little bit on the show, where we turned into 15-year-old versions of ourselves. Like, we got so comfortable where we're just a lot of inside jokes, locker room humor during the commercial break. And then whenever we had a stand-up segment, me and Kyle would just like wrestle with each other. And the first couple of times, it was just like a Greco-Roman grapple. It's like, watch out. We keep our balance. We'll stay up. And then he took me down one time. I took him down one time. And then from there, we were tackling each other like every week. And I remember the lawyer, the producers, even some execs from NFL Network were like, yo, y'all got to chill. Like, one, like, you're going to damage something in here. Two, more importantly, you guys are going to get hurt, and it's on us. So you have to chill. So that's a memory that I'll remember, because that's when I knew, like, we finally became a team versus a group of people working together. And then we had these outdoor shoots we were doing. We went to a park in New York, and we're like, shooting in a basket, throwing the football in a basket. Kyle climbs a fence and his butt crack is hanging out. He got the plumber's crack. And then we did this, pizza, like a field trip, but it's all on film. Yeah. And we're eating the pizza. And then we come up with this genius idea, who can eat the pizza the fastest. I'm competitive. I'm going crazy. I know I'm going to win. I love pizza. Of course, people know I crashed my car trying to save one. And then Kyle is ultra competitive. Like, he wants to win everything.
Right.
He was so confident. I'm going to win this. See, are you kidding me? I'm going to win this. And it's funny because he survived, but he almost died. Like, with no exaggeration. And I've been talking to the producers. They're like, what do you want to see on the show this week? I was like, find me the clip where Kyle almost dies. And legit, he just shoves the whole pizza in his mouth, barely chews it, so it gets stuck right in his throat.
Yeah, the cheese is a problem with
and
that.
And he couldn't say anything because he couldn't speak. And at first we're like, oh, here's Kyle, because Kyle's really good. He's a former, you know, real world guy and a former soap opera actor. So he knows how to grab the attention. When we're on the set and there's a four shot, Kyle knows how to do, he'll do a shoulder shrug, he'll give like a Zoolander. He knows how to grab the scene. So I'm thinking, oh, he's just playing it off so all the cameras can look at him. By the time we realize he's not like joking, we had to do the Heimlich. He's crying. He's crying in pain. I'm crying in tears. So,
and like, all that's on film.
All that's on film. And just watch Good Morning Football this week. We'll show it.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question, was what can you give us a little tease? Like, what's coming on Friday for your last show? Because this podcast will come out very, very early Thursday morning. So the people listening on Thursday.
I'm not sure, you know, what we'll have. I'm positive they'll have another guest. You know, we had Dominic Raiola and Randy Moss call in. And, you know, I don't know if anybody caught it on camera, but like my eyes started to water, you know, when these guys came on. Like today, I literally had to wipe my eye because Randy's sitting there with this big smile and he's talking glowingly about me. And, you know, he's a friend of mine, but when somebody's, you know, one of your idols of the game and big brothers and mentors, they never lose those titles either. He may be like a friend or a brother now, but, you know, for him to just be so happy for me, That meant a lot because this was the same dude that challenged me as a player and instilled confidence in me that nobody would understand. Like nobody knows what it's like. Imagine being a basketball player and Michael Jordan not doing what you saw on The Last Dance, but like building up the young player and whispering to him how great he is and how you need to go off on these guys and they can't stop you. Like Randy was the best player in all of football. And he was whispering that in my ear in the games where he was out. And even sometimes the games that he was in, he's like, yo, like you're the best on the field. I don't care who's out. They can't stop you. And as cool as I might've acted, you know, and like having that football face and I'm like, all right, I got you. I'm about to go out there. Inside, I'm a kid doing backflips. Like Randy Moss is building me up. So that's special to me. But, you know, I think we should have a, I think we should have a couple of more guests showing up on Friday. It might get emotional. Might see a tear or two.
I was going to say, if you're tearing up on Wednesday, I bet we'll see you balling by Friday. So
yeah, maybe, man. I don't know. Here's the thing about me. Everything that you might hear me say this week and everything you might hear me say on Friday, I've said to my castmates face to face. I've even called them at times late, been out drinking and just called them. Hey, I appreciate you. Told them how much I love them. I'm a very emotional person. I've taken everything that football has given me and I give that in every space that I'm in. So when I'm part of a team, I don't care if it's me coaching high school football, Don Bosco in New Jersey, just coaching the wide receivers. I'm talking to them like these little dudes are all my sons, not just my son on the team. And the same thing with Good Morning Football. I talk to them the same way. So when you hear it, just know that it's been said before. So that might be the reason I don't cry, because I might have cried before telling them how much I love them.
The chemistry was, you know, it's hard enough in this business to get, you know, a lot of shows are two people and it's hard enough to get chemistry with two. To get chemistry with four is really something. And you guys obviously had it. So
thank you.
I'll miss you on the show. I hope when you go to the CBS morning show, they still let you pick out your suits, because one of the best things about watching you on the NFL Today and Good Morning Football is seeing the outfit. Yeah. So I hope CBS doesn't try to tone you down with that. We need to.
Nah, they're not. I'm still going to bring a little spice. Now I can't go crazy every day, but I want to bring some elements of the casual look to the morning show. But at the same time, I have to respect the rich tradition and the legacy. You know, I can't show up day one with a t-shirt on and some ripped jeans. I got to rock the suit and the tie.
Yeah, but you have the cool suits. You'll be good.
I got the cool suits. But like, yeah. I'll tell you a quick funny suit story. I remember playing in Seattle, and this is when my suits were loud and baggy, and I really didn't know like how to buy a suit. I had the old school Steve Harvey buttons that went up to the bottom of my neck, like 42 buttons on my blazer. And I had the colors of the teams we were playing. I picked my suits out long before the season started. And the colors of the team were like within the suit, not like subtleties, like the stitching. I'm talking about just loud, vibrant colors. Remember getting on the bus, and Matt Hasselbeck was like, hey, so like, what are you going to do with all your suits when you get done playing? And I'm like, what do you mean? Matt, mind you, Matt is like, he acts like he's not joking. He'll ask you a question with the straight face, but really he had it planned the whole time. And he always does it, what? So I'm like, what do you mean? I'm gonna wear them, I guess. He's like, oh, because I thought you were gonna like be a pimp or something, you know, because they're like really loud, Nate. And he's like, didn't break a smile. And then everybody else is giggling around them. And it's kind of one of the moments where I laugh too, but then I look down like, damn, these suits is pretty loud. You know what I'm saying? So that taught me to like, I can still like grab attention without being over the top.
Right. This is the last question I'll ask you, and it's on a tangent, but
it's all right. Do your thing.
It's been in my head since you said it at sort of the beginning of the interview, and you talked about your college career at Nevada. I'm always fascinated. What is it like going to college in Las Vegas? Because college is basically Las Vegas.
Reno.
How far is Reno from Las Vegas? It's like
8 hours driving. You know what
okay,
I'm saying?
So you couldn't be on the strip when you wanted, like you couldn't be like on a Friday night at like 8 o'clock. You can't be like, let's go down to the strip.
Nah. Okay, guys went out there to kick it, and you know they call Reno the biggest little city in the world. I used to call it like a bootleg Vegas. It's a lot bigger and brighter and better now. But like when I was there, you can go from one end to Reno to the other in like 15 minutes. It's very small. And you know, for what it's worth, there's certain things that mimicked Las Vegas. You know, we had the Strip, and we had the clubs, you had gentlemen's clubs, you had the gambling. But like all of that was so far fetched for me. Even if I was a school in Vegas, like I didn't have any money. Like I was broke. Not like you know, I had a little bit of money and they give us the stipend and no, like we didn't have the big checks like they were getting at the big schools. I know guys that I met in the league and they're like, oh, we were getting $2,500 a month. I'm like, $2,500? We were getting $600. I had $300 for my rent. I had to buy food. I was dating my girlfriend, who's my wife now. And I still had to find time to like buy myself some Sauconies or Sauconies, however you want to pronounce it.
Right.
So I didn't have a lot of like liquid cash, a lot of excess cash. So even if I wanted to indulge in the quote unquote nightlife of Reno or Vegas, if I was there, like I wouldn't even have enough. So luckily I didn't have any bad habits like gambling or partying. You know, usually being broke, it kind of it smothers any habits that you want to have.
I've just always been fascinated by people who go to college in Las Vegas because I think the last thing a college student needs is all that temptation.
But you know what, though? Like, I was always fascinated with guys who went to big schools. So, like, we had, like, 12,000 full-time students when I was there. And then I got drafted, and guys that are from, like, Oklahoma and Oregon and Michigan State. And literally, like a kid from some podunk country town, which I'm not. I'm from Seattle. I would ask them, like, yo, what was it like to play at Florida? And their answers would always shock me. They're like, yo, like we were NFL players. Everybody loved us. Like we were the biggest thing on campus.
Right.
I would meet a girl my senior year and I'd go up to her and be like, hey, what's up, baby? How you doing? Oh, man, you just got here. You just transferred. You look good. You want to go out? And the girl would be like, I've been here for 4 years. And that's how big our school is. You know, you run into somebody 4 years later that you've been going to school with the whole time. I always thought, like, more so than Vegas, being a superstar at schools like that, like, you're going to have to, like, figure it out. You know, prime example is, like, Johnny Manziel.
Right, for sure.
I think him being such a superstar stifled his, like, career path because once he got in the league in Cleveland, like, what was Cleveland or at least the NFL lifestyle going to show him that he didn't already experience at Texas A&M?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's true. It's a good point. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Best of luck at CBS. I'll miss you on Good Morning Football. And even though you're going to be doing CBS, I still want you on the pod. So,
of course, man. Well, listen.
Be in touch. And
you are one of the best in the business, Jay. I appreciate the work you put in. You're diligent with your efforts. You know, you put in the necessary like hard work that people don't get to see.
I appreciate that.
Oftentimes the end result is an article or a podcast or something that you write or tweet. For a guy who knows the work you put in, I just want to say for the world to know that those long nights and early mornings don't go unnoticed, my brother.
I appreciate that. Very nice of you to say. Thank you. And good luck.
No doubt. Let's do this again. Let's do it in a few weeks or maybe a month. The season kicks off. Let's talk about early season surprises and early season disappointments.
I'll have to find out if you've met Oprah yet. Now that you've been with Gail. We'll get some Oprah stories.
It's one of those things, you know, you hang out with somebody famous that knows somebody else that's super famous. You kind of got to play it off. You got to let it happen organically.
Of course.
Quick story before we go, and I'll end you with this. Being in New York, I've always wanted to meet Jay-Z. Like, I'm a huge Jay-Z fan. Like, I feel like he shifted the culture. He talked to, you know, the young African-American male who wanted to wear baggy shirts forever and put rims on their car. And he changed his game and everybody else followed suit. No more jerseys, wear button-ups and stop putting rims on your cars, you know, leave it stock. And now he's talking about stocks and bonds and business and venture capitalism and cryptocurrency, all of this, right? So I feel like over the course of his career, coming from where he came from, he's used his music to help elevate the mind. That's why I love Jay-Z. All right, I just want to set it up like that. Now, I always thought in New York, I'm going to run into him. I know people at Roc Nation. I know people at Roc Nation that send me clothes from their Planes brand. One of my closest friends, really like one of my best friends here in New Jersey, shout out to Jamil Spencer, great man, great husband, great father. Our kids know each other. They play on the same teams. He knows Jay-Z, like personally. He knows like Diddy personally. They work together for years, close friends, families kicked it together. They've been on private jets and parties together. So it was one of those things where I always kind of wanted to be like, hey, yo, what's up? Can you just set up a meeting? Can you say like you meet him for coffee and I'm with you? Mm-hmm. In the back of my mind, I'm like, nah, because then like that's corny. And like you don't want to meet somebody on your terms and they're just kind of like casual about the meeting. Fast forward to last year. I'm in L.A. I'm down there for some business. I go to Nice Guy, which is this nice little low-key restaurant. You know what I'm saying? Hard to get into. Can't take pictures in there. It's always like a celeb in there, right? So I'm in there chilling. I'm having a drink with my boy. I'm like, yo, that's Jay-Z over there. He's like, oh, yeah, that's what's up. But it's one of those spots where you don't pull up on anybody. You can't just walk in and be like, hey, yo, what's up, Jay? How you doing? Because security might be like, yo, we all in here chilling. Like, this is the boutique vibe. Like, come on. Right. Don't bother him. And then if I come across, even if he recognizes me, like everybody in there is going to be looking at me like, who's this random black dude? Like, you don't run up on anybody while they're sitting down at dinner, chilling and having a good time. So he gets up, he walks off. And I'm like, damn, man, I should have said something to Jay. Like, I should at least like gave him a nod while he walks by. I remember freezing up when I was in Miami and seeing Michael Jordan. I was like, I'm never going to let that happen again. That'll be another story for another time. So he walks out and I'm like, you know what? Forget this. I get up. I walk out. He's still waiting on his car outside. He's chilling. Jay-Z got the New York fitted. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, how you doing, Jay? My name is Nate Brails. He's like, yeah, how you doing? I know who you are. And I'm like, oh, man, nice to meet you, bro. Like, I'm a big fan. And I don't want to take up too much of your time. He's like, yeah, you know, you doing your thing, NFL and all that. And I'm like, okay, man, look. Well, I just want to tell you that I moved to New York about 3 or 4 years ago. And the way this works is I'm going to see you around, you know, not because I'm feeling myself. It's just because I'm making moves in your city. And eventually I'm going to be doing enough to where you're going to notice my name. And he was like, yeah, you know, respect. And he just dapped me up and that was it. And I left like and that was when I talked to Jay. So it was almost good that I didn't meet him at any other point before that.
Right.
Because I was just the guy talking football.
And what kind of rush was it when he said he knew who you were?
It was incredible. It was like when Pacino said he knew who I was. Al Pacino was like, yeah, yeah, I know who you are. You do the football show, right? Yeah, I'm a big football fan. And I was like, what? Timeout. I looked at I was working with Extra. I looked at my cameraman and said, cut the camera for a second. I'm about to fan out. I said, I had the microphone. I said, do you like Mr. Pacino? You know who I am? Yeah, I love football. He's like, yeah, you work on the morning show and then Sundays. I was like, what's going on? So whenever I hear somebody that say like, yeah, I know who you are and it's not football related, like Pacino didn't say, man, I loved it when you played with Randy Moss. He was talking about my work in TV. Like that right there is a mark of a guy who has successfully transitioned out of one chapter into the other.
So I had a similar experience where I interviewed Tom Brady once in person. This was many years ago. And when I introduced myself, I said, oh, Jimmy Trainer, I work for Sports Illustrated. I write this column called Hot Clicks at the time. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know it. And I totally thought he was bullshitting. I didn't believe him for 1 second. But, you know, if it is true, that's pretty cool. But
But for a split second, whether he was just trying to be nice or he actually knew, either way, it's kind of trippy and it makes you feel good because Tom Brady, even if he didn't know, he didn't have to be nice. So that makes you think right there that he actually do. And I will bet you Tom Brady does. Tom Brady doesn't say things just the same. So I bet you he was a big fan of your work.
All right. Well, I'm a big fan of yours. So good luck and have fun on Friday.
All right, brother. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you. You too. All right. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, joining me now, SI Media Podcast regular. Always good to check in with the man who knows everything about ESPN and HBO, Saturday Night Live, a few other things. James Andrew Miller. Jim, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well, despite the circumstances of the world.
Yeah, doing what? Curb's coming back in October. Come on.
It's been a good week. We got the news on Curb, and we've got the NFL starting up in 2 weeks. So let's start with that because you are the man who knows everything about ESPN and wrote that phenomenal book. It's funny. I talk to a lot of people in the sports media world, sports media business. There's a lot of buzz for who's going to get the host of the Peyton Eli Manning show on the Monday Night Football alternative or alternate, I guess, broadcast. What can you tell us about that? What do you got on that?
I don't know the answer, but I will say this, that they're making a pretty big deal of it. You know, as you know, Peyton was somebody that they thought of for the booth originally, wanted him badly. I think Peyton made a smart decision not competing with Romo and not having to jump into that morass. But I think this actually is going to be fun, and it's going to be pretty cool. And so this is a great assignment. And Maria's gone, and they have a bunch of new talent to look at, and people who have been there for a while. So it's one of the most highly coveted assignments that's come up at ESPN in a while, and there's certainly been a lot of jockeying for it.
Are there any names you can drop, or you're not comfortable doing that? Who's in the running? Do we know who's in the mix?
I was told under the penalty of death. Yeah. So not to be a jerk, but I just want to kind of keep that promise. But
well, let me ask you this question. Is there any chance they'd go outside of ESPN for a host?
Well, I think, look, as much as...
Let me just say this for anyone listening before you get to it, because I don't know if everyone's... You know, this isn't as much an ESPN deal as it is... This is a Peyton Manning deal. It's his production company. He's going to call the shots here. That's why I ask about going outside of ESPN. I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I think that's the instructive point, which is that unlike a lot of assignments, this is not going to be, you know, Seth Markham and Lee Fitting and the rest, you know, the rest of the gang there. This is about Peyton. And so if there is somebody that is outside the ESPN ecosystem and Peyton wants that person, believe me, they're going to do everything they can to get that person. Right. They're not going to say no to him.
Right. Well, I want to be clear. I'm going to throw a name out there. I'm sure this person's not in the mix because they're busy enough, but I'm just going to use the name as a, if Peyton says he wants Pat McAfee, for example, who does not work for ESPN, Pat McAfee's going to get that job just based on the fact that that's what Peyton, what Peyton wants is what Peyton's going to get with this deal, correct?
I absolutely believe so, except for one thing, which is that there are people outside of ESPN who he may want who have contractual, you know, handcuffs, so to speak. And so that's something that ESPN is probably not going to be able to maneuver. Of course, you know, there could be penalties or money to assuage certain things and make certain covenants go away. But then that gets really expensive. And quite frankly, if another network has somebody that they want under contract and they have those collars on that contract, that's because they're really worried about that person's bandwidth. You know, and so it's always interesting. There's two ways to look at it. One is we don't want to give our person to the competition. Or the second is it's great for us because it shows that we have the person that everybody wants. It's a great advertisement for our product when that person's on ESPN Air, you know, and you could line up 100 executives and probably 50 would think one way and 50 would think the other.
You know, I talked about this with Joe Buck on this podcast last week.
Yeah, that was a great interview for me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I said to him, you know, if you just go by personality and hosting skills, talent, et cetera, you know, ESPN, I thought, had the perfect guy to host with Peyton and Eli and Kenny Mayne. And then obviously he gets let go. But Joe made the point that, you know, Kenny would want to be doing his own stuff. And you need, what Joe said is you need someone really young, an up and comer, or someone really old who's confident enough where, like, this is going to be the Peyton Manning show. And Eli to a lesser extent. So the host can't try to really dominate or even get in too many things. Do you agree with Joe's assessment on that?
Absolutely. First of all, Joe's wicked smart. But second of all, you know why we're talking about Tony Romo and Tony Romo's going to the bank with that check every week? Is because Jim Nance set him up perfectly. He wasn't trying to compete with him. He gave him all the oxygen he needed. It's much harder than it seems, than it looks, than it feels, than you can listen to. I mean, Nance, obviously Jim Nance is damn good at what he does, but his ability to kind of give birth to Romo obviously Romo was a natural at it, but the truth is that maybe paired with somebody else, remember Tony Kornheiser was in the Monday Night Football booth. That did not work out well. And it's a really difficult thing. So I would think that for me, I mean, I like Kenny Mayne, but Kenny and Peyton, that's you have two people trying to pick the same spot, and that just won't work. What they really need is somebody who's going to be super smart and who's going to understand the chemistry between Peyton and Eli and get the hell out of the way.
Right, right. And they, well, we are 2.5 weeks away from the first Monday night, so I would imagine a decision has to come down pretty soon, no?
Well, it's not only that, but you have to be really, really quiet about maybe some auditions and some tryouts that you're doing, because these things can go myriad ways, right? And you just can't pick somebody that you've got a gut feeling about. You got to get in the booth. You got to do some recording. So at least that's how I feel. You know, you don't, the last thing you want to do to Peyton and to Eli is make a mistake. Even if it's somebody that Peyton wants, you got to get that person on their feet and see how it works. So I hope right now they're doing some quiet testing. Be, you know, it's like what Reagan said to Gorbachev, trust but verify, you know, even if it is Peyton's choice.
Yeah. How should Steve Levy, Brian Griese, and Lewis Riddick feel about this?
Forget about it. Just, you know, they have a big, big job that they have to do every week. And the last thing they need to be doing is looking at this other thing. Who cares? I mean, all they, you know, I know it sounds like an easy thing to do, and I think Steve Levy is capable of making it that easy. Just keep the focus on what you're doing in your booth and making that show the best it can possibly be, particularly after such a fractured, pothole-laden, you know, recent history.
Right. Moving on from the Monday Night Football alternate broadcast, came out this week. Max Kellerman will be off of First Take. Andrew Martian of the Post said this was a Stephen A. call. I would imagine if Stephen A. is making $12 million a year, ESPN's going to do what he wants. You know, it's a tough thing there because, you know, Stephen A. is, they're taking care of Kellerman. They're going to give him a morning radio show and a TV show. But you think, does this maybe make Stephen A. look bad a little bit if this is true? Or what do you think?
No. I mean, first of all, I think Marchand said that Stephen A. was making $8 million. That's like, you know,
12, like, I think he said
on a weekend. It's more than I think it's more than 12. But the, wow. But the point is, though, that he supplies a lot of tonnage. He clearly is the star of that show. And if somebody's not working for him, then that person is going to go. And I don't think anybody who watches that show is going to be, I mean, no offense against Max, it's going to be mad at Stephen A. for Max getting cut out. The question becomes, though, what does Stephen A. really want? Because if he wants, you know, like a lamp there, then I think that's kind of shitty. And yeah, that's not great for the viewers. Stephen A. should be equal to the challenge of having somebody with a triple digit IQ who's going to be really smart, really funny, understand the dynamic that goes on, which is Stephen A. gets 10 words to everybody's one, but still have somebody formidable. If it's just, you know, somebody who's going to sit there and just be a sycophant, I think that's when you start to say, this doesn't look good for Stephen A.
I don't watch the show. I see clips on Twitter that whenever they go viral, you know, but I would imagine the, I know it's a debate show, but I would think what you need more than anything is someone who's got some personality and is entertaining. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, 99% of the debates are stupid. I mean, you know, who's better, Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees? I mean, yeah, okay, we're not exactly, you know, curing COVID here. So, like, isn't entertainment more important than, like, winning the debate?
Yeah, but remember, you have 3 hours to fill. You have a bunch of time to fill, right? Yeah. And so that's why they come up with sometimes these goofy constructs and like weird debates and like these questions, you know, that, I mean, quite frankly, I don't care about. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of young eyeballs in front of cold pizza watching this stuff. And they care or they're entertained by it. But in order to do that, though, going back to my other point, you need to have two credible people. Now, somebody's not going to be as boisterous and they may not be as incredibly highly opinionated as Stephen A., but you got to have somebody who's going to at least give him a run for his money.
Does anyone on air talent only have more power to ESPN than Stephen A.?
Right now, no. Nope.
And is it solely based on the money that show? I mean, you know, you have like a Scott Van Pelt who is not promoted in the way that Stephen A. is, it seems like, but he churns along the Midnight Sports Center. It does well. He's well-liked. When it comes to sort of ESPN pushing personalities, he doesn't get nearly the push that like a Stephen A. gets. Is it because First Take makes more money than the Midnight Sports Center? What is it about that?
I mean, tonnage is a big deal.
Right.
Particularly for ESPN, right? 8,760 hours a year. I mean, so when you get a show that goes across the week like that and also delivers younger eyeballs and time spent viewing is pretty high, you know, I mean, that's how you get the salary that he gets. I think that, I mean, arguably when Chris Berman was still in his prime and even in his waning years, you know, he probably had a lot of, he had a big seat at the table. Let's put it that way. But the other thing is that, remember something, ESPN through the years has always tried to make sure that no one, and this goes back to when Keith and Dan were, you know, the first Sports Center anchors on the cover of TV Guide. I mean, they were getting trampled on by executives in the sense that they were trying to keep the toothpaste in the tube and not let them be out of control and egotistical. So I still think for most of ESPN talent, they, you know, there's nobody that's kind of has the kind of influence and the audacity, let's say, that
Is that Larry David? Is that Larry? If it's no. Larry, you can take it. If it's anyone else, you have to still do the podcast.
No, unfortunately, it's not Larry.
All right, it's not Larry. Damn it. I wish it was Larry. When was the last time you had contact with Larry?
Earlier this summer, I believe.
How are his spirits in the middle of COVID?
You know, a sad happy Larry. No, I think that I mean, look, one of the things that I love about Larry David is that if he does laugh or if there is good news, it is incredibly well-earned because you're starting like so deep down. Like everybody else, you know, you're kind of like starting at sea level. And right. So like if we see something that's good or we see something that makes us laugh, you know, it's like this kind of jump. Like Larry's down here. You know, right. And I can't tell you, Jimmy, how many comedians, and this was goes back to the Saturday Night Live book, and even like before, who have said that the greatest thrill in their career is making Larry David laugh. I mean, that's the lottery prize.
Yeah.
Because you know that he never does anything just for the sake of doing it. He's never going to do anything just to make, I mean, maybe his new wife, but I'm just saying, right. Not going to do anything just to make somebody feel good. And so everything, it's a true meritocracy with Larry David. Yeah.
Well, we'll circle back to Larry and Curb and your book. Well, let's put a bow on ESPN. The last thing, you know, they went through a hellacious couple of weeks there with the Maria Taylor, Rachel Nichols situation. And then I think it was Stephen A. He got in trouble for comments about Shohei Ohtani. And when all that happened, I had Martian on the pod and I said, you know, just as an observer, it does seem like there's something off with Jimmy Pitaro and the company. And there just always seems to be anarchy. There always seems to be something that's, you know, bad PR or unpleasant. Or now they've been quiet here for a couple of weeks. Is that a fair observation, or is it like, you know, this is the TV media business and people are crazy and this is what happens?
I get asked this a lot because ESPN is an outlier. I think there's probably two contextual things to mention. First of all, I mean, at one point ESPN had 1,000 people on air under that they were paying for on air. So they're so big that chances are that there's always going to be like a hiccup, a pothole, or like an atom bomb going off somewhere sometime. Second of all, I think that it's just endemic to the ESPN culture that people don't keep it inside. I mean, I'm sure you know, there's a lot of crap that's gone on this summer at other places. They just do a better job of containing it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's unfair to, I mean, I don't want to be a Pitaro apologist, but I think, first of all, Pitaro is, he doesn't have one. George Bodenheimer is running ESPN. Mark Shapiro would literally level somebody if they had leaked something, or you kind of understood. I mean, Steve Bornstein, nobody's going to mess around. Like, and this is nothing against Burke or Norby or anybody, but Jimmy a lot of times is the person that talent wants to speak to. And if there's a problem, talent wants to talk to, or the reporters want to talk to him and get the quote. There's, you know, there's not a lot of people out there that give great quote, so to speak, at ESPN besides Jimmy, in part because of his title and his importance, his influence over the product. So I think that it's a really tricky thing. But the other problem is that sometimes they dig these holes for themselves where they say, well, we're going to keep politics out of sports. We're going to keep race out of sports, and we're going to keep people's personal opinions out of sports. It's like, it's impossible to do.
Well, with the Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor controversy, one of the things that came out of that, and it was a bad job by me, and I think anyone who covers sports media, in that at the time, how was it not criticized more when they blew up Countdown? I think the last version that flopped was with Beatle and some other people. And they named Maria Taylor and Rachel Nichols as, like, you know, they're both going to host it and we'll randomly decide who gets the finals. And you, if you have a show like that, you need to have one host. You want to have someone fill in, people take vacation and all that. But like the fact that it wasn't established who the main host was, and I'm not saying it should have been Rachel or Maria, it could have been either one. They're both excellent at what they do. But when you look back on the fact that that was how they handled it, and, you know, not naming a number one host, it's not completely shocking that the whole thing ends up blowing up and being a disaster.
Well, I think when the real history is written, you might want to pay attention to some contracts, because I think it's even worse than that. It wasn't
Do tell.
It wasn't that they didn't decide. Part of the legacy of what we're going to be looking back on, let's just say that when somebody has something in a contract that they have a certain role and then people decide to ignore it, that's a mess. And it also, the other problem is that that sent a signal across all sports, forget about the NBA, to talent. I mean, I knew agents and on-air people who were calling saying, wait a second, I got it in my contract that I definitely get this and this. What does this mean now? Because so-and-so had it in her contract that she got X, Y, and Z, and they took it away from her. And so that's a real problem. The other problem is that even before Beatle, there was the Simmons and Sage Steele era.
Like, Magic Johnson. You
know, they spent a ton of money on the NBA. At one point, there were layoffs. You know, a lot of people thought, oh, the layoffs were directly linked and inextricably connected to the NBA deal. You know, people in Burbank, the CFOs, that, you know, the money people, you could make that case or you couldn't. That's beside the point. But the other problem is that ESPN has failed repeatedly to do great shoulder programming in the NBA. And it's a double pain in the ass for them, because Turner does such a great job. And so it's like, we're spending all this money and we get, oh, the finals, and we put them on ABC and everything else. And yet at the same time, if you can't get your act together and really put together great programming and a great cast of characters to carry that programming, you know, that's what a lot of people get paid for. And it's always been the NBA's ESPN's Waterloo.
Sounds like Rachel is supposed to host the NBA Finals, but you don't have to say that. I'm just reading between the lines. All right, enough about ESPN. October 1st, The Sopranos prequel, The Many Saints of Newark, comes out. And then in October, HBO announced Curb will return for season 11. I think you were on Twitter, and everyone should follow Jim on Twitter. You said you think it's going to be October 24th for the Curb debut. Now, a good host would have you come on here and say, tell me what you know about the season of Curb. I don't want to know. I want to go in fresh. I don't want spoilers. But could you give me sort of like a roundabout? What have you heard about this season? I will say one thing right off the bat. I know Richard Lewis not in this season because he had some medical issues, which bums me out because
he's going to be on it.
Oh, they said no Richard Lewis because of some health issues.
I know, but he's made it into season 11. I don't want to give anything away.
No, that's great. Okay, good.
But I mean, we all love Richard, and he had three surgeries, and okay. I'm just so glad that he is going to be part of season 11. Obviously, the loss of Bob Weinstein continues to, you know, be sad, but there is, and I promise I won't give it away, but there is one delicious addition to the cast this season, which is great.
I'll tell you, based on season 10, who I wouldn't have minded if they made them a permanent cast member for season 11, and that was John Hamm. He was so freaking good in that episode last year where he was basically Larry.
So good.
Do you know if we see him at all in season 11? You can give that if you know that, because I would love to see him again.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But, you know, the other thing is, when John Hamm hosts Saturday Night Live, man, he brings it. Like, you know, there are hosts on a Monday night, they like sit there with their arms folded and I don't want to do this and I don't want to do this and that's going to make me sound like a jerk and, you know, whatever. John Hamm, you saw it in Curb too. The guy is great and he really does crush it.
If you want to see a really funny John Hamm thing, Billy on the Street, Billy Eichner, who I love and is hilarious on Twitter. He does a Billy on the Street with John Hamm, with the two of them just running up to people. It's Billy Eichner saying, do you want to have a threesome with me and John Hamm? And John Hamm standing there. And a lot of the, you know, some people are like, well, I'll have sex with John Hamm, but not you. And some people are like, oh, no, I would never. And then they see John Hamm and like, oh, well, you know, it's really funny. It's on YouTube. So check that out if you.
I mean, poor John. I mean, the problem is that he's so freaking good looking and his persona on Mad Men was so antithetical to, you know, comedic. But he's absolutely
very funny.
In addition to being, you know, most people's hall pass. He's just hilarious.
Very funny. I'm going to go into the Sopranos movie with very low expectations. It's David Chase, so you shouldn't have low expectations. But for me, this is just me personally. The fact that no one from the show cast is in the movie, sort of. Lessens my excitement level. Tempers, that was the word. But tell me what you know about the movie
Here's the thing. If David had put the cast members in, then you could say, geez, I hope this doesn't wind up. I don't know. I just, Michael Imperioli, like, I can't imagine him like, what are they going to like earlier right. and later? And how's that going to work? I think David made a really shrewd, smart decision, which is not to take those. First of all, it doesn't really work with the conceit, right? This is a prequel.
Right.
So it's very, very hard. I mean, unless you're going to pull some serious Benjamin Button shit, you know.
Right. No, I know it couldn't be done. I know there was no way to do it if you're doing a prequel. But for me, it doesn't, you know, maybe I would be more excited if there was a movie about what's going on now, although you can't do that with, unfortunately, James Gandolfini not being here. But listen, if you tell me there was a way to see, you know, Edie Falco doing Carmella and Michael Imperioli, well, he ended up dying in the series, but those people, I would love to see them again. The fact that this is not that, it tempers me a little bit, but I don't blame them. They had no choice.
Yeah, I made a strategic decision about a decade ago. I start with low expectations on virtually everything. it's kind of like, just winds up being a lot easier to manage.
Right, right.
But let's face it, you know, one thing that we all know about David Chase, even though he was working in television for so long and then, of course, created this unbelievable show, David Chase's respect and affection and desire to be part of the movie business has always been paramount. And so I'm just, you know, just on that alone, like this guy is finally getting, you know, up to bat, carte blanche up to bat. So, you know, I mean, I gotta believe he's going to come through. I hope at least that's the case.
So we mentioned The Sopranos and Curb Your Enthusiasm, both, of course, smash hits for HBO. And Jim, who has written must-read books on Saturday Night Live and ESPN, among other things, has a book called Tinderbox coming out in November on everything and then some on HBO. Do we have an exact date for the book?
November 16th.
And I know the last time you were on, we talked about it briefly, but you really cover everything about HBO in this book. I mean, you're going back to when it launched, shows that people barely heard of, probably from the early 80s up until now. So we'll have you on when the book comes out to go in depth on it. But I'm looking forward to it, and I'm glad knowing you really did cover everything in this. I saw the back. You tweeted the cover and the back with the quotes. There's a good quote from Larry there if you want to mention it. But you know, it's the array of people who have worked on HBO shows too. You know, you see Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you think Seinfeld, but Veep was as good as any show in the last, you know, 10 years to come down the pike. And
yeah, she only won the Emmy 6 years in a row for that.
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
By the way, I really say this in the book, but comedy wise, with all due respect, as they say, to everyone else, our generation, I mean, there's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I mean, she just kills it. She just crushed it, obviously, as Elaine. You know, I first interviewed her, you know, about SNL. She got there when she was 21 or 22, and she did not have a good experience. You can't really look at her early days on SNL and say, wow. I mean, obviously, she was talented and attractive and all that stuff. But she has put together, I think, the greatest portfolio for a comedic actress of our generation.
Without a doubt.
It's unbelievable. And she's terrific talking about Veep.
And I like that you're not just covering the dramas and the sitcoms. I know, you know, I think there's something in there about comic relief with Billy Crystal and Whoopi Goldberg and Robin Williams. Do you get into inside the NFL at all?
Oh yeah, sports. Okay. I'm a sports guy, you know. So
yeah.
Sports documentaries. I had, you know, lots to cover in that. So
I can't. How many pages we got on this one?
Well, I'm a little it's bigger than CAA and ESPN. It's 954 pages.
Keep you busy right through the holidays. That's the goal, right?
But there's an audio version and a Kindle version, so you don't have to lug it around.
No, because I love the SNL book, and I'll be into this book. So, but we'll have you on when we're closer to that and get in depth on it. I appreciate you coming on, and
thank you so much.
We will talk Curb and HBO in November.
Great. Thanks so much, Jimmy.
Be well, Jim.
Bye.
All right. We'll be right back. All right. Weekly Train of Thought segment with Sal Licata from SNY and WFAN here in New York. We'll get into some items to discuss. Sal, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. I'm glad we're doing this today because, so for people who don't know, Sal appears on SNY local sports station here in New York, and you do debate segments on most of the shows that you appear on. Mm-hmm. And then this week we got the news that Max Kellerman is leaving First Take, and Andrew Marchand reported it's because Stephen A. wanted him off the show. So I'm curious for your perspective. Can you do a good sports debate show if you don't like the person you're doing with, or don't respect the person you're doing with, or you don't feel like the person you're doing with is bringing enough to the table?
Well, those are three different things. I think you can do one if you don't like somebody. And for the record, I usually work with one person, you know, Moose. So and him and I have been friends for a long time. So generally, I've worked with him over the years debating. So I haven't had that issue. But I've worked with different partners over the years. I've been there for almost 12 years.
Right. And on the radio, when you do radio on FAN, you have a partner and then you end up debating too.
Yeah, so, and that could happen. And that's, you know, a tricky thing. Here's the number one thing. If you don't like somebody, it doesn't matter. It could turn into a good debate. If you don't respect somebody, That's an issue. But the number one thing, and I'll say this, and I've said it to Moose, I've said it with other partners that I've worked with on radio, as long as the other person, or me included, doesn't take the argument personally, you'll be fine. I mean, we can argue over Robinson Cano's contract extension or whatever trade or whatever team we think is going to win or not. It really doesn't mean anything. It's our opinions. As long as you don't, A, make it personal or be disrespectful, and then B, take it personally where they're not arguing with you. You're arguing the point. You're not debating each other. You're debating the topic. So, yeah, I think that it really shouldn't matter then who you work with if you follow those guidelines.
Well, see, this is why I can never do a debate show, because if I said Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time and the person I'm debating with says, no, he's not, I'd say you're an idiot and that would be the end of it. So like, I can't do it. Like, I just can't. I can't do it.
I know. And it is funny.
I also,
we've talked about this for years. Yeah, off the air. You've always said the same thing. I don't know how you do it. I can't deal with it. I don't have patience for it.
Right. I would just say you're stupid and move on with my life. I also think it's interesting to me that you said you don't have to like someone to do a good debate, but you have to respect them. I usually don't respect people I don't like.
Well, so you don't. You're right. You don't have to respect them. Right. But if you going into a debate, if you got to be able to feel like you could be yourself and that the person you're debating with is going to be at least on par with what your knowledge is on whatever the subject is. That's what I mean. There are certain people you work with, you're like, oh, this person has no idea. Well, I don't respect them as much as maybe I would another person. So it's a tricky thing. But like I said, as long as you don't make it personal.
I wonder what it was about Kellerman that Steve. I don't know what it was. I don't think you could listen. I don't watch the show, but I don't think anyone would say like Max Kellerman doesn't know what he's talking. Like, he follows sports. So like, yes, he may have outrageous opinions. Like if you want to say, I don't know, Derek Carr is the best quarterback in the NFL. Like he's not coming out with like outrageous opinions. Like, so I do wonder if it's personal, professional, a little of both. It's interesting that one person would say, I don't want to have this person debate me anymore on this show.
But do we know that that's really the whole dynamic? I mean, I look, if you're Stephen A. Smith and you have the power to choose your partner and you feel like for whatever reason it's not working, you've had enough of this guy. Look, I mean, I hate to even bring this up, but I know you're a huge fan of it. You know, Mike and the Dog, one of the reasons why they broke up was because they had enough of it. Now, they weren't debating each other necessarily, but doing a show together all those years, you know, sometimes the personalities don't gel. You get sick and tired of one another. Maybe it just got to that point where they weren't vibing as friends. They weren't connecting. And Stephen A. Smith is like, you know what? It's just not working. And let's find somebody else.
Now, that point, I understand. I do think after a while, you sort of get sick of people and you need to move on. I think they did it for 5 years, which isn't that long.
Feels like five months.
Five years. Yeah.
I haven't paid attention to it. I mean, I just don't watch it. No disrespect. Right. I just don't watch it.
But. Right. I understand. Speaking of watching, have you watched any of the three episodes of Hard Knocks on HBO for number two on Train of Thoughts?
I am ashamed to say that I have not. All year long, I've been saying football season starts when Hard Knocks airs. You and I talked about it weeks back. I said I couldn't wait to watch it. I don't care who the teams are. It's one of my favorite shows. I have not, A, had the time, or B, made the time to watch it. I do plan on watching it a little bit later on this evening. But no, I have not watched one second of it.
I've been completely bored by it. And last night, Tuesday night, you know, everyone on Twitter was trying to get likes and retweets, so they kept tweeting the video of the first 3 minutes of the drone, which was very cool. I mean, no, 3 minutes of the drone, which was cool, and then 57 minutes of complete boringness. So it just there's just been nothing there. I mean, and it's a little like the I was going to use a word, but I don't. Let me figure out the appropriate word. The fawning over Jerry Jones it's a little much, but.
Is he the best part of it? I'm looking forward to checking
it
out.
No, there is no best part of it. I mean, it's just boring. And
does McCarthy come across like he has a clue or no?
Not really. I mean, I've said this all along. I think social media killed that show. They got a good bounce back the 1 year with the Browns. I just don't think the Cowboys have the personalities. I think that you need personalities. They don't have the personalities. So.
You know what's interesting, too? And I've actually watched, I took the time, the Jets do one, right? And I feel like other teams are doing it, too. The Jets do one that's called Jets, One Jets Drive or something like that, where it's similar. It's not as well done as HBO, but it's kind of similar. And I feel like we've seen more of those from individual teams. It's not, as much as I love Hard Knocks, it's definitely lost its luster and not the same that it was, you know, 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago.
Right. Topic number three here for Train of Thoughts. Did you watch SummerSlam over the weekend?
All right. Let me just preface it by saying I am not into the current stuff. I've gotten out of the current storylines maybe for a couple of years. However, I followed along a little bit on Twitter. I know you had Roman Reigns on. I happen to like him. I love Cena. So when I saw that Cena was coming back, I was like, all right, let me see. So actually on Monday, and I didn't even know you and I were going to discuss this, I had some time and I was like, let me just see what this was about and kind of buzz through it. So I did watch the parts that I would be interested in and checked it out and saw enough of it, I think, to have an idea of what went on.
Now, did you watch CM Punk by any chance on Friday night?
By luck, I did. I was on watching TV. I think I was watching whatever the Yankee game was or something that was on Friday. And I was on Twitter and somebody said that Punk was coming out or something. So I happened to flip it on real quick and I did catch that.
You saw the grown man cry tears of joy when CM Punk came out?
I mean, come on now. That's a little bit much. CM Punk, even when I was into it occasionally back then, he never really did it for me. And right. I wouldn't say that was a wow, my God, home run moment, but the pop that he got was incredible when you watch that back on video.
So the reason I bring it up is because I do think, you know, everyone from AEW says it and everyone from WWE says, like, there's no wars, like the Monday Night Wars with WCW and WWE, and they say there's no W. But I do think, the reason I wanted to bring it up, I do think that the CM Punk return on Friday night and the overwhelmingly positive publicity, the buzz, the rating for it, like, was up 50% from the week before. I think that hurt SummerSlam from the standpoint of the bar was raised. People had expectations. If you follow it closely, which I don't follow it, I follow the big stuff closely. I don't follow the undercard stuff. People were livid about, I mean, Becky Lynch returned, which got everyone excited, but she beat the champion in like 5 seconds. So people were livid about that.
Well, yeah, I actually have an issue with that. Now, I followed a little bit with Bianca Belair and saw how it just doesn't make sense to me. And Becky Lynch, whatever, she doesn't really do it for me either. But the fact that you would come back and beat your champion almost for like a year or so, because I think I did watch the Royal Rumble. That's when she won, if I'm not mistaken, or whatever. How does she beat her in a non-match in 2 seconds? That was, who the hell, who's coming up with that crap?
I can't remember. I mean, I'm sure it's happened. I don't know about recently, and who knows, because now fans are just back in this arenas now. I can't remember something being so unpopular and getting fans so pissed off as what they did with that. And then now for me this is just me. To me, there's no one more boring. It's when he comes on, I change the channel and I'm out, and that's Brock Lesnar. So he came back, and then I was done with that. So it was not I thought the Cena Reigns stuff was great.
Cena does is fantastic. Reigns has been really good. Since he turned heel, he's been great. So
and then they bring out Brock Lesnar, and I'm going to bed.
Exactly. I was like, this is the big move. It just didn't. By the way, I went to watch it, right? So I go to Peacock, and I'm sure everybody's had these issues. I go to Peacock, and I'm looking for it. I can't even find it. It's not on the latest episode. I click it, and I'm watching what I think is SummerSlam, and I'm like, why are they all screens again? I thought that we got past this. So I was texting my buddy. Actually, I texted Monzo. I go, dude, why weren't there people in the crowd? He goes, I think you're watching last year's SummerSlam. I had no idea I was watching the wrong one. Peacock makes it impossible to even find the thing, but then I did, and I had two issues with that. Lesnar being like it's some big deal, and beating Bianca Belair in 2 seconds, which I just thought was ridiculous.
Usually I come off as the old fart with the streaming issues, but this time it was you, so that's good.
I know how to get it. I like Peacock for other stuff. Their WWE thing is...
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. Well, so I went on WWE Network over the weekend to search something. There's no search bar to search on the WWE Network, which is a major problem. All right. Topic number four, last topic here of Train of Thoughts. I didn't tell you we were going to discuss this one, but I wanted to get your fresh thoughts. I don't even know if you know about it. because this is my favorite story by far and away today in the entire world. I can't get enough of it. Did you see this story about the guy who was on the cover of the Nirvana album suing the band?
I did, which I still have an issue. You know why I saw about it? Because you tweeted about it. I'm not comprehending it properly. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to sue them?
I love a good flimsy lawsuit story. So this is right up my alley.
Did whoever you tweet respond back to you saying that it was
American? So I tweeted my former SI colleague, Mike McCann, who's a lawyer and does a great job with all this. And he's like, well, first of all, the statute of limitations is up because the guy's like in his
30s. Yeah. Right.
And then there's a certain amount of years after you're a minor where you can sue. And that's expired. Then I find out, though, the guy has like recreated the cover. The guy has tweeted about how great it was to be on the cover. So now he sues.
Also, I would have to think, now I don't know this to be fact, but I would have to think that somehow when they were making that cover, they got it approved by the kid's parents or something, didn't they? They didn't just steal a photo and use it.
Who knows? Maybe the who knows? Who know? I don't know the details there.
Where the hell would they find that photo anyway? I'm sure it was part of a photo shoot for the album.
I would assume whoever Nirvana's record label was has everything legally done properly with, I mean, photo rights issues. You can't put any photo on an album or CD at the time, whatever it was,
right,
and put it out. Like, they're legal. I'm sure the record, this isn't a Nirvana deal. This would be the record company. And I'm sure they vetted and did everything legally about using that photo. So the guy doesn't have a case, but I just find it, the lawsuit's just, it's just so amusing.
Yeah, that's up your alley. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. It wasn't maybe it wasn't blacked out. So that was allowed to be shown. I mean, would that be allowed to be shown now, the full nude baby in public in a store?
I mean, I would assume because it's a baby. I don't, you know, maybe they covered it like they do with like nudie magazines. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I'm
not even sure.
I don't remember at the time. I don't remember it at the time being a big deal.
Me neither. I had it. And I'm going to go to Borders. I asked you, I don't know if SI is doing it, the fantasy. I got to get my fantasy prep and football prep underway.
There's no Borders anymore.
Yeah. Or no, maybe Barnes and Nobles. I get them mixed up. I got to go there. I'll check out the nudie magazine aisle and see if, but I don't think that you could show
There's no nudie magazines in Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, they are. They have those. I've seen some of them over last September when I went to check out my fantasy.
If you are still listening to this podcast at this time, I want you to tweet me and Sal at Sal_Licata. There's no way there's nudie magazines at Barnes & Noble.
Pretty sure that there are. I want to say at least Penthouse is there, but maybe more. I've kind of like glanced as I was looking for my wink wink fantasy magazines. I've glanced and saw some stuff, so I believe
this is what happens when you just have a baby.
Excited. I can't wait to get to the store. Let me go check out Barnes and Noble or whatever.
I wanted to read some of the reviews I got left on Apple for the podcast, but this podcast is so long, so we'll do it next week. But I want to read some of the reviews out loud because some of them are really funny. And if you're still listening, leave a review. All right, Sal, appreciate it. We'll talk to you next. We're getting closer to football season. Next week, we got to do some over-unders for the
season. Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
Be well. Take care. All right. My thanks to Nate Burleson and James Andrew Miller and Sal Licata for the pod this week. Great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, leave a review, subscribe. If you could rate it on Apple, that helps tremendously. If you missed any past episodes, go into the archives of the SI Media Podcast and check them out. Joe Buck on the show last week. 2 weeks ago, WWE superstar Roman Reigns and SiriusXM radio host Chris Mad Dog Russo. 3 weeks ago, Ian Eagle. 4 weeks ago, Brian Curtis of The Ringer. Check them out. Subscribe, listen, download, rate, review. All right. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Stay safe and take care.